is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Sharon Charles, and I have a wonderful guest in my studio. It's actually her office. Her name is Jenny Sangave. And you've been an expert. You've been working for 20 years with children, differentiating and customizing instruction, maximize a student's potential to be successful in school and life. Boy, I can't imagine more wonderful things than a woman after my own heart. And like me, you are a mother of some children who have some special needs. You say you've got a son who's diagnosed with sensory processing disorder, and along the line, maybe you'll tell us what that is. Anyway, welcome, thank you. And you are the executive director of Linda Mood Bell in Austin, Texas.
I'm the center director of Linda Mood Bell in Austin.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. Now, tell us what Linda Mood Bell is. Of course, that's a name.
I know.
Explain.
Yeah, absolutely. So, more than 30 years ago, Pat Linda Mood and Nancy Bell, they've been working with students for years. Pat Linda Mood is a speech language pathologist. Nancy Bell is an elementary school teacher with her master's in reading. And 30 years ago, they developed. Worked with students and developed a program that's now, Linda Mood Bell Learning Processes. Started with the LIPS program, which helped with articulation, and has since grown into a program that supports fluency and then also reading comprehension.
Okay, great. So now I was thinking that Linda Mood Bell was help or therapy for dyslexia. So I understand a little bit more now that I've talked to you. Tell us about that. Is it dyslexia? Is it dyslexia only?
Yeah. So we work with a wide range of students. I mean, it's ages 4 to adult. We help about 50% of our students with previous diagnoses. 50% of our students have no previous diagnoses. Out of the students who do have diagnoses, I'd say the most common diagnoses are ADHD, dyslexia, autism spectrum disorder, and then students with processing challenges, and that may be auditory processing disorder or sensory processing or central processing. And just challenges with language coming in and being able to pull meaning from that. It's a wide range of students. Some work with us for a short amount of time, and then
so I understand you have some students who are home educated and some who go to other schools.
Yes, so our students have a wide variety of backgrounds as well. So some of our students attend public schools, some private, and some students are homeschooled. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So some students come in for an hour a day, some many more than that.
Mm-hmm. Some of our students are with us for an hour a day, and then some of our students up to 6 hours, I would say. A large percentage of our students do work with us 4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, because as I heard when I was taking a tour, you're changing the way their brain processes.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
So when our students come to us, we want to learn more about them and how their brain works. So we do start with an evaluation. That's where we look at underlying sensory cognitive functions. So what that means is, how does their visual system work with their brain? How does their auditory system work with their brain? And then how does their language system work with their brain? So we look at our two main reading programs are our Seeing Stars program, where we look at fluency. So oftentimes our students with reading challenges or have a diagnosis of dyslexia may have some areas of opportunity for growth there. What we're looking at is when it comes to fluency, there's those three areas of the brain that need to be fully developed. So in order to help them reach their potential, we create a program differentiated for them based off of these test results. And then we're always responding to the response in real time as well. So when we're looking at students with reading fluency challenges, we look at that auditory system. And of course, that's where phonemic awareness, that ability to sound a symbol, that ability to identify the order of sounds in a word, and the number. course, that is not everything when it comes to English language, because a lot of words do not play fair. But you do have to have that in your toolbox, especially as an emerging reader, in order to figure out a word that you don't know. Mm-hmm. We also look at their visual system. And I should say one thing about these two areas before we move forward, that what impacts a student's ability to be able to access that instruction is their symbol imagery needs to be fully developed. So students with learning challenges, I would say, with dyslexia, their symbol imagery is not fully developed. So symbol imagery is the ability to hold letters in the mind's eye. So like, this is the word thought. I can see T-H-O-U-G-H-T. And I can actually see those letters in my mind's eye. That ability allows us to read words by sight. All those words by sight. It also impacts spelling. So if I saw that word thought misspelled on a piece of paper, I might have had, you know, that looks funny or wrong, right? Something looks off about it. That's an example of your symbol imagery at work. Mm-hmm. It's that instant knowing, it's that instant recognition. So when we look at those pieces in isolation, and then, of course, in reading fluency, you know, all they're reading and pulling words off of a page, sentence after sentence, what needs to be developed first is that symbol imagery. So we want to know to what degree do they need support there, fully develop their symbol imagery. And then when we step into sight words, which falls under that visual system and spelling, they are learning about all the rules of the English language, they are able to access it because their symbol imagery is developed. So they'll need less exposure to those sight words, and they have a higher level of retention when they need them. So, our evaluation too, we look at their language system. So that's their ability to pull meaning from words or context clues to figure out what it means. So oftentimes, our dyslexic students will find they're very bright and they have a great vocabulary. So they can oftentimes figure out what a word is just based on the context clues or the meaning of a sentence. So they're very likely using that at utmost. And they may or may not be sounding out words, but if your symbol imagery is weak, your ability to bank sight words is not there. So we do the evaluation to get a on to create a program that supports your growth and reading fluency. The one other piece of that, of course, that's for the ability to pull words off of a page. And we also look at comprehension, because we find sometimes our students, for some students when we do the evaluation, we look at their ability to process language auditorily when reading isn't a part of the a part of the evaluation, and then we ask them to comprehend when they're reading. See what the differences are, right? Mm-hmm. And so we find that some students can read like the wind, but they're not able to pull meaning from it. Mm-hmm. So that's where, with visualizing and verbalizing, we're looking to see how developed concept imagery is. And so concept imagery is the ability to make a movie in your mind when you're reading or being read to. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever read a great novel or biography, you see the characters and their travels and family members, all of that. And with those pictures, you can answer critical thinking questions or higher order thinking questions about what you've read. But without those pictures, you wouldn't be able to pull meaning, right, from what you read. So when we look at those components, what's fascinating about concept imagery is that it not only impacts comprehension, but it impacts things like attention, the ability to pay attention. I think of it as like, you know, if I were sitting in a lecture hall listening to a professor speak in Russian, and I do not speak Russian, I would likely be like secretly taking, or like secretly making a grocery list, or doing something else, not because of an attention issue, but because, not because of an attention issue, but because my mind isn't able to call pictures or pull meaning from the language. So I don't feel connected to what's being said, so I'm going to go to a space where I do feel more connected. So a lot of our students, where they're not listening or not paying attention, what's really happening is language is coming in. They're not able to call up those pictures. That's how we call meaning from language. It also supports everything that falls under kind of executive functioning, organization and task initiation and things like that. That all has to do with, you know, if you're able to picture it and the task at hand from start to finish, you can do it on your own, right? Mm-hmm. You know where to begin and what comes next. It also impacts your student socially a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and in some cases, in a profound way. So I think of it, too, as if, you know, if you have a girlfriend call you on the phone to tell you about her weekend and her son had a birthday party and they had a balloon twister come over, all of that, what's happening in your mind as you're calling up those pictures? You can see her home and the balloon twister and all of those things happening. You can connect and ask deep and meaningful questions where the relationship is in service. So it's that, and then just also able to process and understand what somebody's asking of you and respond appropriately. So if that's hard, then that can impact your ability to connect with your peers and adults too.
So lots of areas of brain function that have to all work together, and you're able to do an evaluation and then make a program for that particular student.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
And as we were taking the tour, I saw a lot of positive reinforcement techniques. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So one of the pieces that I get feedback from parents is, we know this program would work, but we really thought our child may not want to come and do it because it is such hard work. They're always shocked and surprised that their child loves to come here and show up every day and do the work that they do. There's a few things we have built into the program, and we're always looking at differentiating that as well. The student needs a special motivator. Some of our students do, and we need to bit fresh and change things up, we do that as well. But most these motivators work for most students most of the time. So we have magical learning moments where they receive a little index card, a special card where they have a message written on it for them from their clinician who they're working with that is something genuine and very specific that they did with that was amazing that hour. They get to take that card, drop it in our ring the bell, and everybody in the center cheers for them. So they do that hour they're here. So the student's coming 20 hours a week, 20 magical moments. And then they also earn magic gems or magic stones. So they receive these stones just for giving their best effort. And so they get to see the bucket. It's a nonverbal, it's a great nonverbal motivator where they get to see and hear the clink of their magic stones in their bucket. And then for every bucket, stars in their star card, which they get to turn in for a prize at the end. One of the other components of what we do, I think, is really motivating and empowering, that we do use the Socratic approach when we're working with students. So that means that we're asking them questions to lead them to answers. We're not pointing out errors. We want them to find it. That's a learning opportunity. So it's very empowering also for a student to know that, they're finding their own answers and their own solutions. So that is just a part of what they get those interactions multiple times every hour. So it makes a difference in that overall self-esteem, which is something that most families coming in here need a big boost.
So they're really working hard. Their brain is making advancements, and you have scientific data to show that, but also that the human aspect. We were standing at the shelf and saying, some student was just looking at a reward, going, oh, wow, because I know some students really have some difficulties.
For one of our students, looking at her magic learning moments is a really special motivating thing. She needs to be reminded of all the amazing things that she does. A lot of our families and students come in with, these false beliefs about themselves that they can't read or they can't or it was always hard, it's not getting better. So we have that veil that's over them that we need to break. So those are some of the things that help do that.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, tell us some success stories. Tell us, walk us through for a student or two. What was it like?
So there's so many students that come to mind. One of our students I know very well and is dear to my heart, came in as a non-reader, in second grade and not reading at all. Even just putting a sound to symbol that those components were not stable. Lots of pretty severe self-esteem issues, and not believing that reading was possible. So we started out, you know, it was one of those students we started out with were even just taking in and processing a single letter or two on a card was too much. And, you know, it was a feeling of wanting to leave the room and leave the space. It was just overwhelming. So it was very hard at first, because we had, there was certainly a very severe dyslexia diagnosis, and also there's the self-esteem component, and like, I've done this before, and it's not going to help, and that type of thing. So we have worked with him. He is reading at grade level and flourishing, transitioned back into school, and is just doing amazing.
Okay, so how long did that take from not being able to read two words to going back to school?
So there's two different ways to think of it. You can think of it as time and then amount of hours, right? Mm-hmm. Because our students, the most intensive support they can receive or what's most recommended, highly recommended, is the 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. And so he was a student who did that. He worked with us for, and for his diagnosis and case, we had in that year's time that we were working with him move from, pre-K, kinder, first, second, within that time, and is flourishing in some of these now. So,
wow.
Amazing. Self-esteem. I mean, it's interesting, working with students, and I see them all come in the door every day. The beginning of when working with a student, meeting them at the door, and now at the end, our students, they seem just taller, more confident, they're engaging. They just believe in themselves again. And you can, it's like I can feel it. I experience it, and it's just. We have all the numbers and test results to prove it, but the child leaves a different child, living in themselves again. And that's what a lot of families say. They use the word, this is a game changer. Mm-hmm. This has changed the trajectory of everything, where we thought we were headed. Mm-hmm. So, amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah. There was another student. The student was in sixth grade. With autism spectrum disorder diagnoses, we worked on some reading fluency as well as comprehension. Comprehension is the main, component there. We worked for 5 months, and made huge, profound gains in processing language. And that student I can remember as well was one barely, responded kind of a muffled response, kind of looked down, no eye contact, and when he just seemed inches taller because he just carried himself, tall and wanted to interact with us, and his mother keeps in touch with us, and he's just doing amazing on this opportunity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Just huge life change in every way. And that was in 5 months.
Amazing. Yes. And so one thing you say around here is dream big.
Mm-hmm.
What's about that?
Yeah. And so that's actually perfect. Because it really comes from, so many of our students have done every reading program under the sun oftentimes. And so parents and the child's belief as well, kind of their expectations of the Lord, that this will always be something, this will always be hard, right? Mm-hmm. It's that belief. And so dreaming big is going beyond kind of, you know, that veil of what you've heard before to see what really is possible. We want students to reach their potential. And so we are dreaming big. We're dreaming further and going beyond what maybe they have heard in the past or believed about their diagnosis or situation or child. And so that's really where that stems from. Mm-hmm. It's just seeing their potential and working with the family and their goals to help them achieve that. Mm-hmm.
So it's not accommodations, it's remediation.
We are, yeah. It's not accommodations. We're wanting to wake the brain up so it can take in symbols and process them properly to read. It can, you know, take in language and call the picture that matches so they have the ability to pull meaning from words. And that changes everything. So it's a unique component of our program, that the imagery that I'm referring to. There's lots of other reading programs out there that have the phonemic awareness components, the sight words, all of that. But if your symbol imagery isn't stable, your ability to receive and access that instruction is very limited. So that's why students are kind of spinning their wheels. So it's a different, we're waking the brain up so that it can access the teaching.
So who is your ideal client? Now, I know you work in public school, and I don't know if it's still true, but when I knew, the typical thing was to do, if a student was having a problem, use drill more, mm-hmm. and then by third grade, if he's not reading, then mm-hmm. seek some therapy. And, of course, you know there's many kinds of therapy, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So what would you tell a mom, mm-hmm. parents, who are not professionals? I don't know how old their child might be, but when should they look at Linda Moodville?
Yeah, that's a great question. Every time that I sit down with a family and talk with them, and if it's, while we're going over test results or before, that parent intuition and that feel of, something is just off, or I want to get a big view of what's happening just to see if what I'm feeling and know here is in alignment with that, or if there is some other support that I can give my child. Sometimes teachers have all the tools to figure that out, and sometimes they don't. They have their class of students, and in terms of diagnosing and looking at all those components, just not the tools or the time to do that. So sometimes teachers are aware and sometimes not. So when a parent has a concern, they absolutely go with that piece. And then when we do our evaluations, they have a great, if they decide to work with their child, they have so much information about what's happening in their child's brain and how to help them. And then to what degree they need support. Some of our students are 6 months or a year behind, and some of our students are 6 years behind. But it's helpful for a parent to know to what degree are the concerns I'm having actually happening. So, an evaluation is just a great place to start for more information if they're feeling like something is just not right.
Okay, great. Any final words? Maybe another success story would be great.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I have so many. We have another student who has more of a severe diagnosis working with us in eighth grade. And she has come to us after, being in eighth grade of experiencing true life. Little to no progress, or almost glacial, right? Just in her ability to read and also process information. So it's both of those components. And it's very challenging, as you can imagine, in middle school, in eighth grade. Middle school is hard, even if everything is perfect. It's just a hard time of life. So socially and emotionally, really feeling defeated in all ways. And so with, you know, with the time that we've spent with her, and I'll say 200 hours, that's kind of a, every 200 hours we always check in with our students. Some of them finish, you know, more quickly than that. We saw just, you know, within 200 hours, a solid year's growth across the board in everything. And with her more severe profile, if you will, just that shift that she's never experienced in her life before. And so I think, you know, Harding, we're just honored to work with the students that and families that walk through our door every day. It is so genuine that I'm just honored to work with them to see that growth. It's not only on paper. I mean, this has changed her life, her belief in herself. She loves coming here and feels like, you know, she can learn again and grow. And she's just, I don't know, it's not just, it's yes, learning how to read, and it is so much more.
Yeah, thank you so much. Oh, wonderful. Thank you. So we are sitting here in the Austin Linda Mood Bell Center, but you are all over the United States and in many countries.
Yeah, we are. We're all over the U.S. and Australia, London. We have our seasonal learning camps all over the world.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the interview. And thank you for what you do for all these
pleasure,
children.
My yes. pleasure.
All right.
Jennifer.
So that's Jennifer Sangave
yes.
and Linda Mood Bell. Thank
right.
you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to thegreatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org.